This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on channelradio.co.uk/2 in association with bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello. Yes, who are we interviewing now?
No one yet. We've got two more guests to talk to, but yeah. I thought we'd catch up. Let them have a breath first, because they run all the way downstairs to the...
For what you call a comfort break.
For a comfort break.
I love that. Sports break. Yeah. So yeah. American.
Yeah.
Comfort break.
Comfort break, yeah. So you can do an email or a tweet, and you can surprise me. I don't
mind.
I
like surprising you. So there's the Maidstone Business Awards.
Yeah.
Coming up, listener.
Yeah, yeah.
They are on Thursday, the 27th of June,
mm-hmm.
and they're at the Mercure Great Danes.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Ashford Business Awards, which are coming up. This is a diary date on Wednesday, the 28th of November.
Yep.
Ashford International.
Yep.
Where I met you, actually, at the last Business Awards, didn't I? You were there and I was there.
I'm always there.
Yeah.
I emcee them.
Yeah.
I'm at all of them.
I was eating.
You came along and eaten. And drunk while I was trying to MC.
Eating and drinking. So very good PR there if you win or you get nominated. So it's worth entering.
Yeah.
What else is going on? Help bridge the gap between schools and businesses.
Oh, we're going to talk about that in a minute. So don't worry about reading that out, because okay. I'm going to talk with Alison about that in a moment.
Shall I rip it up or pass?
No, you keep mm-hmm. it, because I do it every week. But we're going to talk in depth about it with Alison in
our
a moment.
Faves, isn't it, Paul?
Yes.
It is. Yeah.
Love it.
So, but in a similar vein, I want to talk about the Marsh Academy in New Romney is holding a careers and job fair on the 2nd of July for its 15 to 18 year olds. And this is from Terry, the lovely Terry Botfield. I'm looking to put together a local business employer corner with around 10 to 12 businesses who can explain what they look for when they recruit young people. Maybe we'll have jobs coming up, or can just have a discussion with a young person and tell them about the world of work in the Marsh and the adjacent areas. So he's looking for companies from Rye, Ashford, Folkestone, as well as the Marsh. We should have enough space for banners, pop-ups, pull-ups. If you can spare some time on the 2nd of July, or you'd like more information, please contact Terry. And you can email Terry, terry@marshnetwork.co.uk, or you can follow him on the Twitter, where he has my favouritest Twitter handle of all time, which is TD Botty.
Yeah. We all want one like that.
We all want TD Botty. The only other one that surpasses that is Imperious Blablinky,
yeah,
which is the lovely Dave Philpott.
Yeah.
But yeah, so do get hold of Terry, marshnetwork.co.uk, if you'd like to participate in the Marsh Academy Careers Fair.
I just saw a Twitter, a tweet from Gerard Yamavicius.
You mean Gerald Jessica Mafisius?
Yeah, Gerard Yamavicius. He's taught us so many years ago to say his name, and we're still not ready.
Jessica Mafisius.
Well, I'm not sure. Anyway, 9 days left, he says, until Festival of Work, which is a hashtag, a two-day event celebrating people at work. It's great for all leaders and HR. I thought of you. Mm. Explore future of work / HR technology, learning and development. See CIPD, that's a Twitter handle, @CIPD or Festivals of Work, both Twitter handles, for more info. So I'll retweet that and I'll copy in Amanda.
Thank you.
And Amanda. And everybody else is listening.
Fantastic. It's a matter of days before Barcamp Canterbury, sponsored by the Union Kent Computer Department, Fruitworks and Level Up Games. It's Barcamp is a free-to-attend unconference.
It's not camping overnight in a bar, then?
No. It's Barcamp's a well-known thing amongst the geek community.
Okie doke.
Geek, I said, not Greek. Geek community. And they hold them all over the world, actually, bar camps. But there's one coming to Canterbury. It's an unconference, basically, where you rock up and just start talking about something. And if it's interesting, you'll carry on talking about it. A bit like this show, really. Mm-hmm. And if it's interesting, carry on.
Can't get out.
If not, you get hoiked off. But it tends to focus mostly on technology and the gaming industry and stuff like that. It's based in the historic city of Canterbury in the heart of Kent, and it's taking place at Wolfe College, which is one of the buildings on the campus at the University of Kent. And it's the space has generously been donated by the University of Kent School of Computing. It's on Saturday, the 8th of June, so it's this Saturday. Doors open at 9 a.m. Opening talk is at 10 a.m. and the first session is at 10:30 a.m. It is free to attend, but you can book your tickets by going to barcampcanterbury.com. And I sponsored the pizza, apparently.
The pizza?
Apparently.
Did you eat the pizza or just sponsor
No, I've sponsored it.
You're not allowed to eat, though, are you?
No, I'm not going anyway because I'm doing something else, but I'll sponsor the pizza or something.
Very good.
I think. Yeah, there you go.
I'm sure it was delicious.
What you got?
Well, am I allowed to read this one?
I don't know. I don't know what it is,
You never know, if you put it on my desk and I'm not allowed to read it. I'll try this one, and if you stop me, we'll see. There's a free employment law breakfast seminar.
Oh, yeah.
Am I allowed to read that?
Yeah. Well, I gave it to you to read, didn't I? What's the matter with all?
But not that one. Okay. So there's non-disclosure agreements going to be talked about by Carl.
No, you mustn't talk about
Carl Vinson. Non-disclosure. There's Brexit, the implications for employment law by Paul McCleavy. It might be McCalevey. McAlevey. Do you know him, Paul? Yeah. There's a little A there, sneaky A. And then there's managing staff absence, David Morgan. Very good one, HR. You're invited to Girling's free breakfast seminar for HR professionals, managers and business owners, which is delivered by Girling's employment law specialist, Carl Vinson. I'm sure Carl Vinson was a rock and roll guy in the 60s, Paul Mills. Wasn't Carl Vincent a rock and roll guy? Carl Vincent, I'm sure he was.
No, that's Gene Vincent. Gene Vincent. Gene Vincent,
no,
come on.
There's definitely a Carl as well, I'm going to
be. No, it's Carl Douglas.
I've got the
album. Gene Vincent.
I've got the vinyl. Yeah. The seminars are designed to give you the very latest information in workplace law and will be held in Sandwich, Canterbury and Ashford so that you can choose the location which is the most convenient for you. The Sandwich one is Thursday the 6th of June, 8:45 to 10:15 at Discovery Park, the Rayleigh Suite Innovation House, Ramsgate Road, Sandwich. The Canterbury one is Tuesday the 11th of June at 8:45 a.m. to 10:15, and that's at the Spitfire Ground, which is the Kent County Cricket Ground. And the Ashford one is Thursday the 13th of June, 8:45 a.m. to 10:15 at the Kent Invicta Chamber of Commerce in the Lily Room, or the Lil Room, Lil, like a little French one.
Lily?
Little French, Lil, Business Point, Ashford. So go to those. You can book a place by going to marketing@girlings.com. I'm going to pass this over to our HR professional Amanda, who can snaffle that into her handbag and go and say you heard about it on the Business Bunk Report.
I shall. I've actually been to the breakfast seminars before. They're very good.
Yeah.
And I think they're very good because they speak on quite a sort of normal level rather than sort of legalese. It's a level that most people can understand, and it's very relevant, obviously, Brexit and stuff. Yeah. Everybody needs to know where we're at with Brexit.
Exactly.
So I'll be at that one.
So, well, let's carry on from there because let's neatly introduce the lovely Amanda from Ethical HR, Amanda Parvin. Amanda, welcome on to the Business Bunker Show. It is, in fact, your first visit also.
Yes. Yay. God, I'm very quietly.
Yeah. She's been like a rabbit in the headlights. She's sat there with stunned silence going, what the hell have I got myself involved in here? We've kind of first met a few months ago. We actually met at a reverse job fair.
Yeah.
If I remember rightly, in which a number of people with sensory deprivation issues, autism, Asperger's, deafness, actually staged a recruitment fair where they sold their skills to employers rather than the other way around. Normally you have employers have a stand and people come along, whereas these young people had a stand and us as employers came and spoke to them and they sold their talents to us. It was good, wasn't it?
It was very good.
Yeah.
And I know, so Mark Perrin from Kent Supported Employment, he organises lots of really good things and he's very... he's very enthusiastic and very focused on supporting individuals
who
need consideration.
Now, I'm going to fast forward a little bit because I just want to mention it and then we'll come back because I saw you on the telly a couple of weeks ago on ITV Meridian where they did a small piece on the kind of things that you were doing with job candidates with autism and looking at alternative ways of staging interviews, which is brilliant. But why don't we unravel that a bit first and just give us an overview of you, Amanda, who you are, what you are, what you do, and what the ethos of ethical HR is all about.
Okay, so I set my company up last June, and the name was particularly chosen for the way I practice HR. I've seen throughout my HR career, I've seen good and bad practices, and I practice in a very ethical way. And so I set my company up because certain things happened within my private life. My my father had a stroke last Christmas, and my daughter nearly died from her mental ill health and her autism. So I kind of felt that I wanted more flexibility in my life so that I could, you know, care for my family. I always kind of knew that I was a bit quirky as well. And I think when you set up your own company, it allows you to be yourself.
To have an element of quirkiness.
Yes, yeah, yes. I mean, I absolutely love HR and respect, you know, that how it should be done properly. But I also have this kind of quirky way about me as well. And I kind of noticed it when I've been working for other people. But when you have your own company, it allows you to kind of just kind of be free and give it a go and just take the plunge, really.
Yeah, so absolutely. Really so, but... We've talked about this a few times, about some of the ideas that you've got with ethical HR, which I think are really what makes you completely different to anybody else, whether they're ethical or not. You actually have a complete niche that's something quite special, don't you?
I do, yeah. So following on from the ITV Meridian News article, so I was invited to be a member of the panel. There are a lot of people with autism that struggle with getting through that interview process because of complete sensory overload. So I wanted to offer a different way of interviewing people where you can see their skills and they can actually shine. And I think that really came out really well in the news article that I wrote. I just wanted it to be different. I wanted it to be outside and I wanted to be with animals. So I'm now working with, I've got several autistic young men who are hugely talented, got degrees. Again, they're struggling with that interview process. So
well, it's funny, isn't it? Because the interview process is very antagonistic. You know, you've got two people, or maybe more sometimes, facing each other across a desk, basically challenging each other. And that can be incredibly intimidating if you're not comfortable in that kind of environment.
Absolutely. I mean, from my own experience, when I was interviewed, I think it's really uncomfortable to face this bureaucratic, process-driven sort of interview, which is very unfriendly and it doesn't allow you to shine. So for somebody who's got autism, being in an environment sort of like that, it just gives a complete sensory overload. So as I say, I'm working with several young men at the moment. I'm also working with a couple of organisations and looking at their corporate social responsibility. And sort of their workforce and their diversity and equality within their workforce because if you increase the individuals within your company, it has so many benefits to any organisation.
Yeah,
it really does. So it's sort of thinking about your corporate social responsibility, developing your company.
And we were talking earlier as well, weren't we, about diversity in the workplace and even in TV, you know, with things like Emmerdale that have actors with Down syndrome and other medical conditions. I think one of the actors has cerebral palsy or something like that. So it is something that people are taking much more concern over. There's also some practical realities here. As I mentioned earlier, there are 833,000 unfilled jobs, and we're trying to fill jobs with no one to fill them, yet there are pools of talented workers that exist that up until fairly recently were ignored. People with supported needs, disabilities, be they mental or physical. And you and I and Alison as well have been involved with Kent Supported Employment and the People Organisation looking at how we get more people from those communities into work. But you've taken that a step further than the rest of us, and you really kind of are focused on this. So you've got this lovely scheme for helping people with an alternative method of being interviewed. So we'll kind of explore that a bit more in a moment. But you're also looking at offering your consulting services to organisations to help them improve their diversity.
Yes, absolutely. And as I was sort of saying, having a diverse workforce is incredibly beneficial for all organisations.
Yeah.
I mean, it helps with this sort of global growth as well. Mm. If you think you've got people speak different languages, it helps people be more empathic as well.
Yeah.
It helps bring lots of different ideas into team building and stuff like that. So it's got huge advantages.
Absolutely, and it's a funny thing, isn't it? With things like autism and stuff like that, it isn't so much a thing. It's a spectrum, isn't it? You know, all of us could be autistic at some level. Yeah,
they say that we're all on the spectrum somewhere.
Yeah,
but I was also when I was thinking yesterday, I was thinking that also if we think to our circle of friends and family, there are people that we know have. That are unique. I like to use the word unique. That has some form of disability or mental or physical disability. And so I think it was almost like the disability was sort of elite, but we are all different and we all have something unique about us. You know, something quirky about us.
I happen to have a statistic on some of that, that 17% of the workforce have some form of mental. Supported need, for want of a better term, 17%. That's a big chunk of the workforce.
I was looking on House Commons Library yesterday, as I was being a bit geeky, I do love the figures, and the information said that there are 7.6 million people of working age that reported that they had a disability, and that's between January and March this year.
Yeah.
And that's 18% of the working age population.
Yeah.
And then when we look at the disability employment gap, there are 51.7% of people with disabilities are in employment that have disabilities, and 81.7% without disabilities were in employment. So you can see there's a complete difference there. And then we look at the unemployed as well. There is a difference between people with and without a disability as well. So, and government, I think government are set to increase the amount of people with disabilities in employment by 27, so it's a big drive to...
But as employers, it's a great source of talent for us.
Absolutely.
I think the issue comes, and this is where you come into this in big time, the issue comes that most job creation these days in the private sector is with small firms.
Yes.
And small firms don't have the wherewithal for handling these things and are kind of a bit scared.
Absolutely.
If truth be known.
Yes.
So one of the great things of dealing with someone like you is you can hold their hands through this process so that they can hire people. And I want to get this message across because I'm quite keen on this as well. We're not doing this as a favour to people with supported needs. We're doing this as a favour to ourselves as employers by accessing talent that exists.
I think everyone benefits, don't they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, but the thing that's stopping it is fear. On the one side, and the method by which we do it on the other side, you know, because it is quite challenging. And to be quite frank, I can say this because I own a recruitment website. We're absolutely appalling at interviewing people in this country. We really are appalling. You know, we go through the same trite stuff. You know, what do you want to do where do you see yourself in 5 years' time? I'd like to be in your job.
Like you said, it's a strange way to start off a relationship that you want to be positive and mutually beneficial, and you want to work together with somebody. And yet, Paul, like you said, you sit opposite each other and you're firing questions at them and making them, trying to catch them out and make them feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. And also, I've had to point this out to employers quite a number of times. So many employers sit there and go, we're going to interview you. And I go, hold on a minute. Why would they want to work for you?
Mm.
They're as much interviewing you as you are interviewing them. And employers don't see it that way. But now more than ever, they are. People have a choice of jobs now. There's thousands of them out there. Why should they work for you? It's a two-way process, and we don't organise it like that.
I think that's when you look at corporate social responsibility, you do look at an organisation, what is their culture, what do they stand for, and how do they do things.
I don't think there's a responsibility on the employers to make the interviewees feel at ease.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is why I was interested in you saying you take them to where animals are or outside. Yes. So tell us about that.
So I mean, the whole structure of that news article was very much from my heart. So being outside, being with animals and non-judgmental, and there's a lot of service animals as well, so for autism and lots of other people.
I think the tiger cage was going over the top a bit though, Amanda.
Oh, I remember that. Mm-hmm. So it was just really, I mean, Morgan was a talented, really talented young man. When I met him, I couldn't believe how amazing. He actually was, you know, when you meet people and they're like sparkling and they're buzzing. So I wanted him just to feel completely relaxed. So being with an animal, his dog, being outside, and then doing the next part of the interview, which was a working interview. So he was very aware of what was coming, because if they don't know what's going to happen in their interview process, autistic individuals can, that can be too much for them. And he, when he was interviewed, he was fantastic, because he said, this is a really great way to do things and this will really help autistic people get to work. Mm. It's just about, it's just, for me, it's about doing things slightly differently. Mm. It's not hard, it's not expensive, it's not time consuming. It's just, we need to think differently. Yeah. So we can find those people's skills, we can make them feel comfortable, and then we can bring these people into the workplace. And they're such an asset. They, you know, they literally shine. Their energy is so positive.
I totally get it about animals completely relaxing. You know,
yeah.
You know, if I just see a cat curled up, it relaxes me. If you've got eight.
I've got eight. Yes, so we were talking.
You're totally relaxed.
I've got eight cats.
I can feel a Mrs. Slocum moment coming on there.
That's a lot of cats.
Yeah. I had 10, but I know my husband's listening and I wasn't allowed to keep two of the kittens.
We'll say
two.
Oh, we'll no. He made you give two kittens away.
I had to give two away.
That's just
unfair. I've only got eight now, but it's quite a busy household anyway with eight cats running around. But it's heaven. It's really heaven.
See, I'm a dog girl. I've got dogs, but I do love cats as well.
I love all animals, but I think cats purr at a certain level. So when you stroke them, they purr. The vibration, of their purr is very, very relaxing. So animals are just
But also unconditional.
Mind you, not necessarily. There's a fabulous Facebook video going around at the moment of a lady. Every time she tries to sing, the cat smashes her one in the face. have you seen it? It's hilarious. She just started singing, the cat walks up behind her and goes, whammo.
Not cool. The right resonance.
But it was interesting in the ITV Meridian piece that you filmed talking about this interview technique. Basically, the interviewer and the interviewee went for a walk along the seafront, because they were, where are you, Hythe or somewhere?
Up at Sheerness.
Where?
Was it Isle of Sheppey.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. You're at the
something
seaside.
Beginning with this,
yeah.
You're by the sea.
Over the bridge.
Yeah, yeah. They walked whilst chatting.
Yes,
lovely.
That was part of the interview process.
You've got this element of fresh air. They were walking a dog or something.
It was Morgan's dog. Yes, yeah. It was his dog. That would make him feel very comfortable.
Familiar.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And being outside is very calming as well.
So it takes all the antagonism away from that silly, false interview kind of environment and just makes it a stroll and a chat.
Yeah. It's also feet on the ground, which, you know, yoga background that we have is grounding.
Yeah.
So. You know, it strikes me that interviewing in those kind of styles is suitable for everybody as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Why do we have to make everything so antagonistic all the time? You know, why do we have to put people under pressure? I know that sometimes you need to see if people can cope under pressure, obviously, depending on the type of job they do. But why falsely put them in those situations?
I think the thing is, in HR and employment law, you have to ensure that you carry out a fair process with your interview. So that's why it's very structured and the same questions for everybody. You can ask those questions when you're walking along. And the bit where the guys were walking along was, but tell me about yourself.
Yeah.
And so you can still ask those same questions, but just different. That's all rather than this really, really heavily structured process.
Mm. And it's also about the office environment, you know, lights and things like that. I feel completely different when I'm outside.
Yeah.
If I've spent, you know, maybe 6-7 hours in front of my Mac, I start to feel quite ill and have to get out.
Yeah.
No, we're going to go there. There was a joke in there and I just had to avoid it. Sorry. Amanda, it's fascinating talking to you. We could talk about this forever. I need to move on and talk to Alison now, but you can join in with us because we're going to be talking about some of the same things. But for the moment, if people want to find out about the work of Ethical HR and the kind of things you're doing, what's the best way to do that?
They can email me or they can have a look at my website. So my website is www.ethicalhrsolutions.co.uk. My mobile number's there. Call me if you'd rather call me.
Fantastic. There's a link to Amanda's site on the Kent Business Radio. There's also a whole blog about all these kind of issues, of which there's some more information about Amanda's company as well, also on the site at kempersradio.co.uk/KSE, Kent Supported Employment, KSE. If you look at that blog, there's a blog about the work that Amanda does and some of the other people that we're involved with like Mark and his team at Kent Supported Employment and the organisation people. And there's also a couple of other, Telman HR, which is a company based in Norfolk, and the chap that owns that, Chris Wright, is wheelchair bound with cerebral palsy, but he's an HR CIPD accredited person, and he is doing very similar things to you, but for people that have physical disabilities. So it's all in the blog, so do check that out, and do check out Amanda's website and get in touch if you want to know more. For the moment, Amanda, thank you so much for that. It's really fascinating. We love what you do, and we're really supportive of what you're doing on the Bunker Show here. Thank you. We've still got loads of tweets coming in, we've still got loads of emails, and we've still got a really, really lovely guest to talk to, so we're going to need to crack on. I think, have you got anything you need to read that's fairly short?
No, I've only got the Alison Palmer. I've read all the rest, read diligently.
Right.
Done mine.
Well, we're going to talk to Alison about that. Well, I'll just do this one quickly, and then we're going to talk to Alison. It's from Gillingham Football Club. I've got two. Remind me, after we've talked to Alison, there's one more that I need to speak about. Gillingham Football Club are pleased to announce its first sportsman's dinner in over 5 years. The event will be held on July the 25th in the Great Hall, and the night's going to be hosted by former Sky Sports broadcaster Rob McCaffrey, and he'll be joined by former Liverpool, Aston Villa and Wales striker Dean Saunders. The night will consist of a welcome drink, a two-course meal, tea and coffee, questions and answers. It's set to be popular, and we'd love you to come and attend. The tickets cost just £50, which includes VAT, and you can find out and book your ticket by calling Gillingham on 01634, that's Medway 01634 350 350, or you can email the commercial sales manager, James Knott, at jknott, K-N-O-T-T, at priestfield.com. So do check that out if you want to go to a sportsman's dinner at Gillingham Football Club. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the Business Bunker Show, after far too long away, the lovely Alison Palmer.
It's been about 35 years, I think, Paul, hasn't it?
Yes, you reckon, yeah.
Just feels like it. No, thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure, and we love what you do. Alison basically is the FSB in Kent and Medway, without any shadow of a doubt. She does everything, basically.
Well, hang on a minute. There's certain people in this room that help out an awful lot as well, so...
Yeah, but we don't talk about them.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see.
We love what you do. You're the person that coordinates FSB activities. Just give us an overview of what your role is.
I'm chief facilitator and herder.
Yeah.
And I kind of notice things and say, yeah, that'll be good, let's try it. Mm. So FSB is a membership organisation for businesses. Mm. And the businesses join up. We've got about 5,000 members in Kent, which is doing all right.
Yeah.
And if we're not for profit and we're volunteer led. So if businesses are interested in particular topics that affect other businesses, they might get in touch with me and say, why don't we have more events over here? Or why don't we do something to support women in business? Mm. And my job is looking at how that aligns with our national policy work and seeing what really makes sense to all of those other businesses, and then whipping that into shape and in some cases actually letting them get on with it.
Absolutely. I just want to say, you don't have to, and I'm not putting up, this is my view, not yours.
Okay.
The Federation of Small Business is, as far as I'm aware, has the biggest membership of businesses of all the business support organisations, around about 200,000 members. Mm. There are 5.8 million businesses in this country, and 99.7% of them employ less than 250 people. They are all small businesses. We are a nation of small businesses, and there are other business support organisations around that get a lot more clout for no reason other than they got a couple of big members. Mm. But in employment terms and in economic terms, the membership of the FSB
and we're really strict on that membership, actually, so that's absolutely bona fide. And it doesn't depend on how many staff you've got. So if you're a member, you might have 10 businesses and you might employ 200 staff, but we only count you as the member, because you're the important one. Yeah. Do you see what I mean? So we never overinflate our numbers at all.
Yeah. I have to say, I recently used the legal side, they were amazing.
Oh, brilliant.
Absolutely amazing. We went on to pay for the extra, and it was incredible.
Oh, good. You join up as a business, and then behind that, there's loads of benefits, like joining a gym. If you want to, you can use the rowing machine, but you don't have to. That kind of thing. So they're all there. And somebody described it as saying, oh no, I use FSB all the time. It's like having loads of departments behind me. So it's like having your own law firm, but your own HR team.
They were incredible. They actually knocked spots. Tendai, I think his name was. I can't remember now. But they knocked spots off this hot shots, hugely expensive lawyer.
Oh, I'm pleased.
Your
good.
Guy was...
spot on. Amazing. Well, that's what it's there for, absolutely. And then you spend less time and less money on that, and you carry on doing what you're best at. Yeah. That's the idea.
It's often said, and it is true, that the vast majority of people earn their membership fee back in the first year.
As long as you use one of the benefits, then you've covered your cost, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't forget to use it.
Okay, there's so much we could talk about, we've only got half an hour, so we're not going to get it all in. There are certain things that I need to talk to you about that are happening here in Kent and Medway that we're really proud of. Jules, let's start with 30-30.
Yes.
Because it's a thing that's dear to both you and I, and we've kind of hit a milestone this year.
Yeah.
So why don't you give us an overview of 30-30?
I love it. I love it. I've got a little picture here, Jules, in case you're going to be using anything online. But
yes,
Skills 30-30 is this thing, and Paul has been absolutely instrumental in this, actually. Don't listen, Paul, because we're talking about you now. But he's absolutely helped drive this across the county. So over the last few years, we've now had over 1,000 people taking part in this. And it's called Skills 30-30 because loads of our members were saying, we can't find the right staff. Or if we do get young people in particular in for interviews, they don't seem to have the skills we need. They don't want a qualification or a certificate. The businesses want a student or an ex-student to come up with initiative and enthusiasm and some curiosity of mind and some tenacity. And there seemed to be this massive gap. So we devised this and we trialled it out once. And we keep getting invited back, don't we, Paul? I'll talk to you again now. We keep getting invited back to schools, such as the Lee Academies Trust, who've been really supportive of it as well, and among many others. And the format is basically the clues in the title. There's 30 businesses in one room, and we have a bit of a networking session. We have maybe a talk from a local authority leader or a financial advisor or an apprenticeship.
We've had
provider.
LinkedIn come and do talks for us as
We've got great links. Yep, LinkedIn, all kinds of people. So something that will benefit a business owner. At the same time, there's 30 students in another room, and they're having a workshop about the world of work and that transition between being at school and then what happens next. And often that's run by one of our members. So it could be Deborah Turner, who does a lot about how you're going to look and feel when you're going to go into a job interview. So the appearances that do matter and how you can make a good impression. And then those two separate groups, 30-30, get together in the school hall and the lecture theatre, and we do facilitated speed networking, which is really good fun. It's such good fun.
Huge fun.
And it's really
noisy. You've been on them as well, haven't you, Amanda? You've taken part in them as well. So.
And it's really high energy, actually, isn't it? Initially, everyone's very nervous about it. And even the businesses are worried about what on earth they're going to say to these students and what shall I ask them? And I don't know what I'm going to say about my business. Meanwhile, the students are probably thinking the same things about the businesses.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's a very high energy. We give that conversation about 4 minutes. And we've kind of toned it down, haven't we?
It depends on numbers, but
depends on the numbers. And it actually gives that student the chance to practice their pitch, to make a good impression, to build their confidence, to realise it's a bit odd saying the same thing over and over again. But
body
that's
language,
what we have to do in real life.
Body language is huge.
Body language, eye contact, that initial first impression, which can be so important. And it also then gives that student potentially 30 contacts in the world of work.
Exactly.
And that could be local. We've had all sorts of businesses taking part, from local self-employed sole traders, photographers, for example, to people from big construction firms, LinkedIn you mentioned, Southeastern Trains, international banks. So we have a real range of businesses taking part, so that students say at the end of it, as one student said to me when I said to this tall sixth former guy, Year 12, perhaps. I said, how did that go? He went, it was actually quite good.
Oh, well, praise
we've
indeed.
We've done it. It really did open their eyes. And the weird thing is, for the students in particular, we've probably all got job titles that they just wouldn't understand what that means.
Yeah.
Might get yours, Paul. They might. But actually, HR, well, what does that stand for? What is a human resource in a company? So we've been in the world of work too long to forget. To a student, they haven't heard of the job titles that we're talking about.
One of the interesting things, we started this about 3 years ago now.
Yes.
And one of the interesting things that came out of this, and there was a whole reason why we started it. It started after a fight, didn't it, basically?
Yeah, that was pretty much the instigation of it.
There was we were at an event in Ebbsfleet, yeah. And it turned into a bum fight between local businesses and a few head teachers that were there with businesses going, well, the trouble with education is you don't teach the kids anything bloody useful. And the head teachers were going, well, the problem with businesses is you never talk to us. And we decided to step in and do something about that to try and put those two groups together. But what's fascinating when you look at this is that there still can be a bit of an attitude amongst businesses who believe that the young people of today don't have the skills or the training that we had. And it's quite fascinating to hear some of the conversations that go on, because almost invariably the employers go, I didn't realise they were that smart.
And they're so impressed. They're And actually, I've got a little fact here that popped up a minute ago on Twitter. 22% of SMEs lack confidence in their digital skills.
Yeah.
That's exactly why you need to get the next generation and the younger generation coming into your business.
Exactly, yeah.
So often the businesses come out of there full of enthusiasm and hope for the future, because they've met such an amazing, talented group of individuals
who have grown up with digital,
who've grown up with digital, and who can bring so much into their business. So we're just smashing those myths every time.
One of the funniest conversations I heard, it was brilliant.
Is it repeatable, Paul?
I can't remember who it was. There was some guy, a middle-aged guy that ran his own small business, and he was sat there and he was a bit and there was a student sat the other side, and he's going, right, he said, in my place, I'm a stickler for being everybody, being on time and all the rest of it. He said, we start work at 8 o'clock on the dot. And the lad went, I don't get up then. He went, no, we start work at 8 o'clock. He said, I don't get up till 10. And he went, and we finish at 5. And he went, no, I work past there because I work my best in the evenings. Oh. He said, but I don't get up till 10. He said, I can't be with you till about 10:30. And the guy's going, no, we start at 8. And the funny thing was that even for all that antagonism, both sides of that equation started to look at things from a much better perspective, because what the young person was saying is, I live in a world that's digitally connected. We don't work 9 to 5. Yeah, my phone doesn't stop working at 5 o'clock. I still get emails. I get WhatsApps.
Like we were saying with Amanda, it's a two-way street. If they're going to work well together, then actually that employer can think about, well, maybe would it be such a bad thing if that person or anybody potentially worked from 11 till 8? People have different body clocks.
It's about flexibility.
Different times of day.
I mean, I think most businesses, if they can accommodate something like that, then they would try.
We're definitely getting better.
More and more and more. Apart from the fact it's now part of employment law that we have to offer flexible work into our workforce. We have to offer it. We don't have to give it, but we have to offer it. But it pays. It pays.
I think it depends what business it is.
But James Gardner is a brilliant advocate of this.
Sinclair and Rush, I believe.
James runs a company called Sinclair and Rush, which are a huge manufacturing company. They run production lines.
He's been on the show.
Yeah, he has. And the fact is, they run huge production lines, and they are typical of a business that can't be flexible because their production lines are. Even so, James is trying incredibly hard to allow his workforce to be flexible. It takes a huge amount of effort to make sure that the production lines are manned all the time, or womaned all the time, but he allows his workforce to be flexible in one of the most inflexible industries. If he can do it, everybody can do it.
And I think that's where it can generate the Skills 30-30 events can generate such positivity and those kind of ideas in both the students and the businesses.
And that's the key thing. It's about the ideas, because the kids themselves will go, well, you could do it like this. Because for us as business people, we get stuck in a rut. We've always done it the same way we've done it forever. And young people come along and go, well, why'd you do it like that?
Sort of anecdotally, and that's where I started going back and tallying things up a little bit. Anecdotally, I was hearing that businesses had met a student who then became an intern or did some Saturday work experience with that. And it's like, oh, hang on a minute, this is really working. We work closely with Mark Perrin at Kent Supported Employment, and he said, oh, yeah, quite a few people have got a job because of this, because he comes along, talks to the businesses about the benefits and the services that Kent Supported Employment offer in terms of recruiting and almost being a recruitment company for that business. He says a lot of small businesses had heard about KSE through Skills 30-30 and had found staff. And the schools were going, oh, no, it's great, because they've suddenly got links with 30-odd business people who live locally, who then, and work locally, who then might go back and do an assembly or help out at a jobs careers fair or go back and offer some advice to this sort of thing. So we've managed to create this kind of an ongoing building relationships between education and business. Mm. And that's where it started, a fight. Now we've got a bit more of a friendly environment.
Yeah, but it's such a beneficial thing to do for everybody involved for all kinds of reasons. The schools, it ticks their Gatsby box. And for those of you that aren't familiar with that, it's one of the government guidelines that schools have to make so many contacts per year.
And it's not very many. So a secondary school student is meant to have one business interaction or engagement per year of their secondary school life.
Yeah.
Not a lot, so that's not at all. So we're offering 30 in an hour.
Yeah, so with ours, you've satisfied your entire intake for a couple of years. So that's a big selling point for us because it ticks your Gatsby box. But more than that, it's about those people feeding off each other and learning from each other's ideas, you know. And also, I've had to tell employers this so many times. It's not about you selling your jobs anymore. It's about you trying to understand why those talented people might want to work for you
or might not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah? And understanding why you're struggling to get people into your business because you're not offering what they want. Mm. But it's a two-way street and you have to look at both sides of the coin. But I think the most fascinating thing that we've come across, and this is anecdotal because I haven't really added it up, but I'm pretty good at making up numbers. When we first started doing this, I always asked the students at the start of the day, where do you see yourself going when you've finished your A-levels? And I would say, on average, most groups, about 60% would say going to university.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably 20% would say we're going to do an apprenticeship or get a job. And then the rest would go, don't know. Mm. Yeah. In the last year or so, that has radically changed. Every time I've asked that question in the last few times, about 60% of the classes to 70% have said apprenticeship.
Mm.
10% don't know, and maybe 20% thinking that they might do university, but they might not.
Mm.
Generation Z are not going to university because they're not going to get they don't want a degree that costs them 60 or 70,000 quid.
Exactly.
And it's as simple as that.
Yeah. So we've got a few coming up, haven't we? Because literally schools hear about it. We're working with the Careers and Enterprise Company as well, who work on this sort of thing nationally. So we've got one in Broadstairs, 3rd of July.
Yeah.
Down by the Teesside. Yeah. We've got one 25th of September, that's in Tunbridge. Another one in November.
We've got one on the 21st of June, 2020.
Oh, there you go.
Wilmington.
Wow.
To book ahead into this academic diary.
Yeah.
So we love them, and we really do recognise that they benefit the businesses as much as the students and vice versa. And they're really good fun, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah.
Always a bit flying by the seat of your trousers.
Yeah,
because it depends on... Well, businesses say they're going to come.
And you don't even wear trousers.
I got them on today. But,
have you?
Businesses say they're going to come, but actually on that day, we're asking businesses to volunteer 2 hours of their time.
Yeah.
Plus the journey time. It's kind of half a day out, so we so appreciate it. But it means that on some days, we might have 40 people booked and 25 turn up. So... Yeah. It's flexible, but they're very much, they're fun and they're really beneficial. And I think it shows the willingness as well for the businesses to offer back some information and to volunteer their time like that.
Yeah.
We love them.
Absolutely. So 30-30, if anyone out there is running a business, you've got your own business or you're a manager in a business, or listen, if you're at work and you fancy getting involved in this, it's really worth getting involved in.
Yeah.
Come along to one of the events. They're all totally free. It's useful from both points of view. There's also other information that you get to learn. As Alison said, we quite often hear a talk on apprenticeships from the apprenticeship company.
Leads us into something else, doesn't it?
And that nicely leads us into how fantastically well produced this show is.
Because it leads us into
the next thing that Alison's going to talk about.
Yeah, and I've got to talk about this one because it's really exciting. So we know, as champions of small businesses, we know that apprenticeships can work brilliantly in small and micro firms because that member of staff gets a qualification that they can be super proud of and learning the latest, and the business can mould that member of staff to really suit their company as well. So to celebrate this, I've kind of borrowed the idea a little bit from Surrey, but don't worry about that. We're going to make it Kent and Medway our own. We're going to have the first ever graduation ceremony for apprentices at Rochester Cathedral.
Brilliant
on
idea.
The 4th of October. Mm. And it'll be amazing. It'll be gowns, mortarboards, the works, because we're saying we should value their qualification and their achievements exactly as much as if you've been to any of the actual universities.
Mm.
Paul's helping out on that one too.
I am, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I think I think it will take apprenticeships to the next level, because there's a lot of kudos around graduating with a degree from a university, quite rightly. But why shouldn't someone that's studied equally as long,
Exactly. We're making it as prestigious and as, you know, the photo on the mantelpiece sort of element. And we're celebrating all levels of apprenticeships as well. So from level one up to a degree apprenticeship. And it's that sort of myth busting. So as Paul, you were saying that students are now moving more into perhaps I'll have a degree apprenticeship instead of going to university. But it's letting parents and the wider public know this is such a bona fide way of taking your, moving your career onwards and getting qualified.
It's been interesting. It's been an interesting journey the last few years. It's all talking to young people about the world of work and about further education and stuff like that. I've done a few talks now for the schools we've done in the evenings, talking to parents, because head teachers go, yeah, the kids are fine, it's their parents that are the problem. And that's understandable, because an awful lot of parents didn't get the opportunity to go to university. So,
or they've got a rather outdated idea of an apprenticeship means you're going to be a bricklayer. Yeah, well, actually, now it's so vast.
Or you get the alternative that go, apprenticeships aren't worth anything anymore because they're just burger flipping. Of course, a level six or a level seven apprenticeship is a degree. And I have a particular client on jobs in Kent that has a 7-year apprenticeship in nuclear engineering. Brilliant. And I assure you, that's not burger flipping.
One of our members, actually the FSB chairman of Surrey, he runs an architecture firm, and he's got an apprentice who's delighted not to be at university, saving an awful lot on fees, and finding that actually he can put into practice immediately what he's learning on his university day off, puts it back into practice the next day, and can ask everyone in the office, but what about that bit? What about this?
But really we still face a lot of parents that think university is the pinnacle, and that's where they have to send their children. And a lot of that is because they didn't get the opportunity themselves, which is understandable. But they still are misinformed about the world of work as it exists
and
now.
And the options that are there. Because, to be honest, some kids, and they absolutely have every right to, will go to university and
of
get
course.
That, that
and there's a, you know, I'm not saying nobody should go to university. You know, there's lots of vocational degrees that you have to. You have to have a degree to be a nurse even these days. Mm. And, you know, if you want to be a doctor or a brain surgeon or a vet or whatever, you can't. To need a degree. So there's loads of reasons to have a degree. That's not, you know, but there are other ways of doing it now, and that's the key thing, I think.
It's really important to understand that there's different ways that we learn, so everybody has a different learning style. So some people might suit being at university, but other people to learn on the job.
Do you know that actually it's another thing I can tick on my little list. Have you heard of tea levels? Not a cup of tea levels, but tea as in...
We've got 3 minutes left of the show, and I think we ought to hit tea levels. Alison and I were at the House of Commons a couple of weeks ago at the launch of the new tea level things. Alison could give you a better overview than me, but basically tea levels are being rolled out from 2020, and each tea level is in a different sector of the world of employment. I think the first ones are in engineering.
Yes, construction and childcare and digital. So it'll be a case of, not an A-level, but not just sitting at your desk in the classroom, but going out and learning on the job. So from us, from the FSB's perspective, we're saying, we love that idea, but crikey, those on-the-job industry placements are going to be tricky to manage. So we're talking behind the scenes to government about how best that can be sorted out, because that's going to be a massive onus on the small business community to offer those placements. So on one hand, we're saying, great, we want it. On the other hand, we're like, ooh, it's going to be tricky to find
this. And then transport
young people. The tea level requires 45 days a year work experience, and most schools don't have that many contacts in the world of business because they haven't bothered to do that. So there's a lot of challenges here. But it's a two-year program that is the equivalent of 3A levels, and it's in a specific sector of industry, and they start in 2020, basically.
So a mixture of classroom and work-based activity. So there you go.
Alison, we could talk to you forever about the things. You've got so many other things going on. Sadly, we're at the end of the show. Just give us a shout out if people want to find out what's going on with the FSB in general and the FSB in Kent and Medway.
Brilliant. A really quick way, at FSB Kent, as Jules knows.
It's a Twitter handle.
That's the Twitter handle. Website's fsb.org.uk. That's the best one.
Yeah, and if you drill down there, you can find the South East, and you find the events that go on.
Regions, but yeah,
if you click on regions, you can find South East, and Kent and Medway is part of the South East, obviously, and you have loads of other events. You've got Network Connect, you've got all kinds of things going on, haven't you?
Absolutely massive, and that's all our volunteers hosting and running it across the county.
Fantastic. Alison, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sorry we kind of run out of time. Thank you to all our guests. I need to tell you about this week's Business Bunker Extra Show, which is our sister show, which is on Friday on channelradio.co.uk/2 and bizradio.co.uk at 11 a.m, hosted by the lovely Amanda Flanders. And this week, Amanda's co-host is Gemma Fairclough-Haynes of Orchard Employment Law, and their guest is Jeremy Hincliffe, who's from the First Aid Team. And she's also going to have some interviews that she recorded at ZC Live last Friday. So do tune in 11 till 12 this Friday for the Business Bunker Extra Show with Amanda and the crew. I want to say a huge thank you to this week's show sponsors, who Tech Expo. Don't forget to book your exhibition stand if you're in the technology business at a Tech Expo. A massive thank you to our fabulous guest today, Mr. Paul Mills of Reach Performing Arts.
He hasn't done a tap dance.
Yeah, he hasn't yet. He will do in a minute. Yeah.
Bravo.
Amanda Parvin of Ethical HR. The wonderful Alison Palmer of the Federation of Small Business Kent and Medway. My stonkingly gorgeous co-host. And Renter Supreme.
Just call me Bob the Builder.
Bob the Builder. Bob the Builder crack. Jill Serkin. Thank you all so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show. It's been a pleasure to share a couple of hours with you. We'll be back with another show next Tuesday. In the meantime, have a fantastic week, everybody. We'll see you all soon. Take care and bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.